Football Fix with Doug and Wolf. Presented by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Sorry to do this in the middle of the Football Fix, but Wolf and I just looked up and started laughing at what we saw. James Harden last night lost by 3 in overtime. He had 58 points. And they just showed a stat up on the screen that said he's got, what, 112? 112 points in two games, zero assists.
Actually, 115, Douglas.
It was 115?
115 points,
no assists in his last two games. I don't even know that, how you do that.
That's hard to do, man.
But wait a minute. Man. The only other player to go for 55-plus in back-to-back games, Wilt Chamberlain. Think about that.
That's crazy.
Wilt and James Harden. And you realize last night the Rockets hoisted 73 pointers.
I did see that.
That's amazing,
crazy.
Man.
70
crazy.
Triples.
That's by the amazing. Way, we already owe a recantation. Bear just saved me there. He had 6 assists last night.
Okay.
What the stat was is none of those points in the last two games of 115 had an assist.
Right.
Nobody passed him the ball to create the shot.
Yes.
Boy, 7 seconds or less is done because it's just Harden,
the
ball
no
screen,
pass possession.
Switch, and then I'm just going to stand there, pound the ball for 15 seconds, and then shoot it.
If you hate ISO basketball, don't watch Rockets basketball.
You're right.
Because it's Harden against five other guys.
Sorry to get distracted, but that was just such a weird stat to look up and see. It's Doug and Wolf, Paul Calvisi, sideline reporters here for our Football Fix, where we guarantee you football every single weekday morning at 8 o'clock. And let's look at the Cardinals. They've got 3 offensive coordinator guys that seem to be in the running. Good article at ArizonaSports.com to kind of give you the heads up of who we know about as of right now. Tom Clements, offensive coordinator for quite a few years with the Green Bay Packers, assistant head coach. He's in the running, according to NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. Ian Rappaport has already said that he would be a candidate to land any other assistant job with Arizona as well. And I'll get to that in a second. But also, Ben McAdoo, former Giants coach, still in the running.
Still in it.
And Jim Bob Cooter. I'm in this weird area where I want Jim Bob Cooter. This is going to sound so ignorant. Yeah. If he takes the job. And I know you're going, what the crap does that mean? If he doesn't take the job, I'm not bent out of shape because I'm believing maybe he didn't take it because he didn't want to work under Cliff Kingsbury. You know, he doesn't want to be an OC when his path was going towards a head coach until he got fired last year. And maybe he's looking at it and saying, this is my path. So I'm taking a step down if I have to listen to a fired college coach. I'm not going to take the job. So then my attitude is, well, then I don't want you either. But if he takes the job, then I know he's accepting the fact you're not going to get any credit. And I want that mind. I want what he's done with Matthew Stafford to help there for Josh Rosen. So I want Jim Bob Cooter to take the job, but I'm not bent out of shape like the Cardinals screwed this whole thing up if they don't get him, because then I assume he didn't fit.
I would take Jim Bob Cooter, number one in the old Pauly power poll as well, but I'd flip the reasons you just gave. I would cite his work with Matthew Stafford, number one overall. Mm-hmm. A guy with all the talent in the world, former number one pick. But he struggled with the accuracy and the completion percentage. And then under Jim Bob Cooter, man, it was night and day if you look a lot of the stats. And then all of a sudden, Matthew Stafford was a playoff quarterback. And, combined, working with the Lions and the rest of the guy got a few things right, and they fixed that offensive line, and they got to the postseason. That's what I like about his resume.
Yeah, honestly, Basinonians, we did a 4-down territory this morning, and I gave you 4 reasons why I would like Tom Clements. Don't say Clements. Don't say that, Basinonians. Say Clements. All right? I'm saying that to myself, of course, reminding myself, it's Clements. It's not Clements. I think he'd be a mentor to Cliff Kingsbury. That's number one. I think he'd be a guy that would bring a massive resume as a play caller, as an offensive coordinator, as a quarterback coach, a longtime coach in the National Football League. I love his resume. He's not looking to become a head coach. I think that's really important out of that position as well. Because if you're looking for a guy that is going to come in here and suddenly get a claim and then leave and go somewhere else, now you've got that changeover. To me, he's not looking for that. He's a guy that is probably going to show up and stay And then finally, I would have to say he's got experience with players, and I'm talking about real players. Great quarterbacks like Brett Favre. Great quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers. That, to me, matters. I think this guy, Tom Clements, he fits the bill in all of those areas. Now, if it was Jim Bob Cooter, I would not care. I'd be fine with that as well. And here's the other thing. The Cardinals allegedly are also looking at Tom Clements as a guy that could be just an offensive assistant. Kind of a floater, right? An assistant head coach type deal. An offensive assistant like Tom Moore was.
Right. Well, you look at the staff. I mean, it's comprised almost entirely of 20 and 30 and 40-somethings.
Yes.
How comfortable do you think Tom Clements would feel on the staff? And beyond that, how necessary is a guy whose experience goes all the way back to the 70s?
So important, I think, Paul.
You know, do you need that for this staff? Is sort of that gauge against, and especially the knowledge of the other longtime coaches. To me, that's critical. To know exactly, this guy has seen every single head coach that's in the NFL right now. Some with a long track records, and he knows how these guys operate. And when you go into your game planning sessions on a Monday morning, yeah, that's where you start. What's the DNA of the other head coach and their coordinators? And a guy who's 65 has been around for four decades, he has that knowledge other guys just don't have.
I love it. He could bring perspective and context to every conversation Cliff Kingsbury has trying to build this offense.
Positives about this guy. Okay, even though he's 65. Turned down a basketball scholarship from Dean Smith.
Whoa.
Okay. Won a national championship as a college quarterback at Notre Dame.
Wow.
And then was bounced around the CFL like crazy, went back to Notre Dame then to start his coaching career as a quarterback's coach, got to the NFL in 97. He had been coaching consistently from 97 until 2016, involved in different quarterback positions. So all he's done is either quarterback or offensive coordinator. And you plus get the perspective, and normally I would consider this a negative because nobody jumped up and down to go get him in 2017. Nobody demanded his time in 2018. So he's been out of it now for 2 years, two seasons. But maybe there is that little bit of perspective. Not only am I 65 and I've been in the NFL since 97, but I also kind of took a step back and looked at everything. I think you get a lot. If you're so sure Cliff Kingsbury's the guy. I mean, think about this from a Steve Keim standpoint. If you wouldn't have hired him if you didn't believe this is the next Sean McVay. This is the next offensive guru.
Right.
So if you're so sure you're right about this, Tom Clements does fit perfectly with you. And if you're not so sure you're right about this, well, then you have to ask, why did you hire him in the first place? But Tom Clements seems to fit really, really well.
No, he really does. Especially if he might not even get the offensive coordinator title. If you're telling me he's just going to be an offensive assistant,
that's nice
walking
too.
Around telling people to pick stuff up off the ground, you know, and I'd take that all day long.
And he's already been an assistant head coach in Green Bay. So if you've got Vance Joseph and Tom Clements there on the sidelines and in more importantly in the coach's office as your two experienced guys, that works.
Once again, not cheap. This is not cheap.
No.
Michael Bidwell.
I think you can kind of get Clements cheap, though.
He's gone full on. I think you could, but I think just looking at the staff overall, because we're talking about the staff, he's gone full on Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Spared no expense.
Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps Live this Saturday, 9 to 11 at the Chick-fil-A off the 10 and Florence Boulevard in Casa Grande. You'll have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, plus Suns, Coyotes, and Renaissance Festival tickets. Anybody always wanted to see Wolf at the Renaissance Festival?
Oh, if you want to throw an axe, get out to the Renaissance Festival.
Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details on the Chick-fil-A High School Basketball Roadshow Series.
That's a thing, by the way, with the young people out there.
The hilarious thing is
throw axes.
Because Wolf would, I think, completely embrace the atmosphere because that's him.
Well, of course.
But then the people would really freak him out. No. And I just love the juxtaposition of those two things.
Stand in the breach, baby.
Coming up next, Suns. Are the Suns a different team with Devin Booker on the floor? Well, we know the answer is yes. Here's the crazy question. Is it a good thing? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We got a lot going on tonight, both in the city and here in the building. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Suns are on the road at Toronto. Tip-off is at 5:30. You can hear that here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Al and Tim will have the play-by-play for you. Paul and Wolf have Big Red Rage today. That's on ESPN 620 AM. And then right after it, almost right after it, not directly right after it, ASU is at home against Oregon State. Both ASU and Grand Canyon are both home tonight, so try to figure out which one you can get to if you can. Grand Canyon plays Chicago State, who, imagine going into that building with the Havocs, as crazy as they are, and Chicago State hasn't won a road game yet.
Yes.
They're gonna, man, I hope none of the kids for GCU are listening, but man, those Chicago State kids are going to get run over tonight, unless GCU hears me, and then they take it easy, and then they'll lose. But if they don't, man, you'll crush them. And Oregon State's 3-0. Which is like the surprise team of the Pac-12.
Yeah.
They're in a sense tied for first place if you look at it in the loss column. U of A fans will disagree because they're 3-0 and U of A's 4-0, so they're in a sense a half game up. But boy, U of A's been playing, I think they're on like a 6-7 game winning streak, something like that, and I don't think a lot of people assume that. So try to figure out if you can get to one of the two college basketball games. As far as the Suns are concerned, their game against Toronto, Kawhi Leonard has not played in both ends of a back-to-back yet this year, and he played in Boston last night in Toronto's loss to the Celtics. And I don't want to get into the matchup tonight. We just know if Kawhi Leonard plays as hard as he can and Toronto's kicking on all cylinders, the Suns don't have a chance. But one of the things that's more important than the matchup tonight is two of the comments James Jones made to Burns and Gambo yesterday. One of them is accepting the fact this is not Mike D'Antoni's team anymore, and accepting the fact that he agrees this team needs to win the game defensively.
We have to, when you're a younger team, when you're a team that's less skilled, less seasoned than your opponents, you have to win on the edges. And so we need to be a very solid, active defensive team to give ourselves a chance. It's a piece of the puzzle. It won't be our true identity, because we have guys like DeAndre, we have guys like Devin, who offensively every night have an advantage. We have to kind of blend it together, but most definitely we have to establish and maintain our defensive identity, regardless of who we put on the floor. And
when you watch the Suns play, Doug Lease, who's the one guy that stands out on the defensive end of the floor? Is there a guy that you catches your eye, a guy you think really is playing well on the defensive end of the floor?
When I say when they're engaged, it's Josh Jackson, and he has not been defensively engaged lately.
I think Kelly Oubre is a guy that has really played well on the defensive end of the floor, and man, I'd like to see
him. And I don't remember
him
getting a lot of credit in Washington for defense.
Well, I do remember.
He wasn't a disaster, but I think he's picked it up quite a few notches.
I do remember them saying he's a young Trevor Ariza, a 3-and-D type guy, right? But boy, he's done a great job taking the ball to the rack, of course, and playing on the defensive end of the floor. To me, I've been very, very impressed. He gets his hands on a lot of basketballs, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to see him get an opportunity. I don't want to see him start. I want to see Kelly Oubre actually get the opportunity to increase his minutes. That's what I want to see.
The next part of James Jones's conversation, which was really interesting with Burns and Gambo, kind of feeds into the point of D-Book and the defense. And Devin Booker, I do think, has worked harder defensively. And he's not an embarrassment. He's not good, but he's not an embarrassment. But what I'm noticing, and I've always had this belief, especially at the NBA level, if you stand on offense, you stand on defense. If the ball's moving a lot offensively and guys are cutting and guys are engaged offensively, they got the juices in the game. And then they want to get the ball back. So they go on the other end and you have a hypersensitivity of here we go. And you're kind of just in the game. And you need that, unfortunately, because very few guys mentally bring it defensively every possession. But if you're doing well offensively, you're in the flow of the game. And when D-Book is in there offensively, I see a lot of standing. And some of it's D-Book's fault, some of it's the other guy's fault. I just don't see a lot of ball movement. And then it's reflected defensively. And this is what James Jones said about D-Book possibly throwing off just the rhythm of the rest of the team.
We're a different team without him. You know, without Booker, it's a team that's chasing. We're out in passing lanes. And we're kind of wild. You know, with Book and with DeAndre, those are more of our stable guys. And so with them, we just have to be disciplined. We have to execute our rotations. It's a different type of team. I think last night coming back, he was pressing offensively, and Indiana did a great job of trying to frustrate him, and I think you saw that for the rest of our guys. As a whole, I think our team was frustrated last night with the way Indiana guarded us.
I am highly intrigued by the defensive identity of this team and the possibility of them creating a defensive DNA for the Suns. I really am. I am intrigued by this because when you look at the guys they have, when you look at the Josh Jacksons, the Kelly Oubres, the Mikal Bridges, when you look at these guys, even De'Anthony Melton, right? You look at these guys, they're solid defenders. They have a lot of room. They're long, and they get their hands on a lot of basketballs. They have a lot of room to improve. There's no doubt about it, but I think it's mentally that they need to improve. They have all the physical talent to actually have that kind of DNA. Now they need somebody to model it for them. And you need your best player to be that guy. Devin Booker has got to be that guy that will model it for him. He doesn't need to be their best defender, but he needs to set the expectation level as this is the way we play basketball around here. You're going to play out here. You better give effort on the defensive end of the floor. You're not going to get any minutes. Now, that's a gross simplification of the truth, of course. There are players that are really, really good on the offensive end of the floor. Isn't that right, TJ Warren? That aren't great on the defensive end of the floor. Devin Booker's not great on the defensive end of the floor, but he's got to be the guy that sets the tone for everybody else.
I would love to see Devin Booker learn. Don't try to take over the game offensively at the beginning of a possession. Take it over late in the possession. You know, some guys say, I want to give everybody into the flow of the game early, and then late I'll take over. Or they say, okay, the third quarter is kind of when I need to pick it up to blah, blah, blah. No, it's not about quarter. It's not about early. It's not about late in the game. It's about each and every possession. If he gets everybody going or doesn't force up shots early because he feels the responsibility, and the other guys move the ball, then if he gets to about 8 seconds left in the shot clock, okay, I don't want Josh Jackson thinking I need to create for myself. Mm. No, no, no. I don't want that. Try to find a way to get Ayton going early in the possession. Guys feed off that, and then with 8 seconds left, say, D-Book, now you take over. Yeah. If you do that, then I think you'll get everybody better defensively as well. And I'm impressed James Jones had the courage to, when he was talking to Burns and Gambo, to say some of this challenge is on D-Book.
His growth as a leader will require him to adjust. And last night, I don't think he made that adjustment defensively. I think offensively, he pressed and tried to kind of reestablish himself. And Indiana did a great job of trying to take him away. But that's the next step for Book, is to find a way to adjust and lead this team to victory.
What? Wow, I love that.
What D-Book doesn't understand yet is how much his attitude affects everybody else. Do you have that guy in the office mm-hmm. that is just a drain? And he doesn't really do anything wrong, but he's just a drain. If D-Book is frustrated with what they're doing to him defensively, what he does is then he kind of, not overtly, but he throws a tiny little fit offensively, gets upset, and then begrudgingly comes back on defense. And he wants to yell at the refs the whole time he's coming back, or he's frustrated with what's going on, and his defense suffers. And what happens to everybody else? Oh, here goes D-Book.
Yep.
And that's not leadership. That's a drain.
You got to be Tigger, not Eeyore. Google it, my uncle.
Did you go Winnie the Pooh?
I don't know. He's still Krunk, isn't he?
Was he ever?
I'm just saying. Even millennials growing up right now, you know who Winnie the Pooh is.
They know, but they don't want to admit it. Join Burns and Gambo starting at 2 o'clock as they broadcast live from the 48th Annual Barrett Jackson Collector Car Auction at West Road of Scottsdale. You can check out 1,700 rare and exotic cars up for auction, eat and drink from the 40-plus vendors on site, and much, much more. Head to the events page at arizonasports.com for details and info on tickets. Coming up next from the Auction Community Studios, what does Max Starks think about the Cardinals coaching staff so far? Let's do some Maximum Football. Let's talk playoffs. Let's talk draft. Let's talk cards. Coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. He played tackle in the NFL for more than a decade. Max Starks. Max Starks. Maximum Football. Maximum Football. With Doug and Wolf.
Please welcome, from the University of Florida, tackle Max Starks.
Max Starks just really trucking Wolf and I this morning as he came in so nicely. And when the man's a large man. So when a large man says, are either of your daughters selling Girl Scout cookies?
No.
You assume he's offering to buy them. When Wolf and I both said, no, they're not. The comeback was, good, you can buy them from my daughter.
Good. You know, I'll take the do-si-dos, please.
Didn't see that company coming. The Super Bowl winning offensive lineman, Max Starks, has come in for Maximum Football here into the Auction Community Studios. And we've already gone through today, Max, prerequisites that we have for the offensive coordinator that we'd like to see for the Cardinals. We've been through names of offensive coordinators. What to you is actually more important of those two things? Is it the name or is it what they bring to the table? Do you see somebody out there that the Cardinals have to have, or are you more concerned with the fit?
You know, my biggest thing is, and I think it has to go with the fit over the name. At this point, listen, we're getting Cliff Kingsbury, who's a relative unknown in the NFL ranks. We know what he can do at the college level, but this is a whole new game. I just want a solid staff that gets together, that has synergy, and actually could turn this thing around and get along together.
Yep.
Because I've seen what a dysfunctional staff looks like, and I want to see a functional staff. One that just gets together and wants to do it. I don't care if it's a reclamation type of guy that wants to prove people wrong and why he was not, you know, invited back to the league at some point.
Well done.
Or a guy who is just a hardworking lifetime assistant that just wants to do his job and do it to the
best. And from what you've seen, are they trending that way?
I think so. I mean, you know, we talked about it with Sean Kugler. I thought that was a solid hire. I think Vance Joseph was a solid defensive hire. You know, I think they're moving in the right direction for a lot of these things. And, you know, once again, once it rounds out and they start working, that's what I want to see.
Do you think that Sean Kugler and James Saxon are going to be able to speak the same terminology language?
Yes. They came from the same school.
See, this is what I love.
Yeah.
This is what I love right here, because you know what happens. The offensive line coach works very closely with the running back coach in regard to what, Max? Blocking schemes,
how we're going to
block
outs,
fronts,
everything.
Right? Protection.
And James Saxon comes from Pittsburgh, which is where Sean Kugler cut his teeth.
Love it.
You know, and also he came, you have to think also when he was in Buffalo, you know, he was also there with who's it? Doug Marrone?
Yeah, Doug.
So Doug's also been in Pittsburgh too. So there's a lot of carryover, a lot of consistency, and you look at what James Saxon did in Pittsburgh with the running backs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just face it. He had the who's who, the newcomer of the year last year, which was James Conner, and then what you did with Le'Veon. So now you get a David Johnson, very similar type of guy.
You gotta be kidding
to what those other two were. So now you have that premium carryover, and then Sean Kugler's worked with that entire line in Pittsburgh. I mean, think about the guys that are on that line. He worked with all of them except for Villanueva.
Mm-hmm.
He coached all the other ones. So, and all of them when they were young. So I think that's a great synergy on offense. And then you find the right coordinator who blends in and can be the, not the counter to Cliff Kingsbury, but the completeness of Cliff Kingsbury, meaning that guy who has that run game approach and who has his ear when it comes to actually adding the hard nose, the 4-minute type of concept and principles and philosophy to that offense. So I think they're on the right path. It's just we got to get it right in the home stretch.
So if you are Cliff Kingsbury and or Steve Keim hiring that offensive coordinator, with who's out there, who does Max Starks want?
You know, there's not too much out there. I mean, I look at Tom Clements. I heard you guys talking about him earlier. McKee's Rocks guy. He's a McKee's Rocks guy.
No, is he really?
In PA, yeah.
No.
Yeah, right outside of Pittsburgh.
Western PA.
Western PA guy.
Wow.
And he's my dad's
college. I like him even more.
He's my dad's college teammate.
He's
a Notre Damer.
Okay.
So,
I love him.
Yeah, so Tom, I think, would be a good fit. And I think he's also one of those guys, he's not going to sit there and try and railroad anybody, you know? And I think that's the thing. And he's a very smart, intelligent guy. He's seen it all. And he has that personality where he can be tough and hard-nosed when he needs to be as far as discipline is. But he also is a guy who is amenable when it comes to looking at compromise and figuring out the best way to keep the harmony, because there's a reason why he's done it. So, I mean, I think he could be a good fit here.
What would be the negative on Clements?
Negative on Clements, I mean, he could possibly take a backseat to the head coach and say, oh, okay, you know, hey, Cliff, listen, this is your show. Mm-hmm. You want to do this? He could, but here's the thing. I don't think he will, because you have Saxton and Kugler also on that offensive side of the ball who are going to be pushing for run. And I think that's also going to be the thing that keeps his voice there. He won't get thin. And I think that's the issue, mm-hmm. you know, because you think about when he was in Green Bay, when they played us in the Super Bowl, you know, that offense was humming and they were good. But then it started to kind of sag a little bit as more Aaron Rodgers started to creep in and say, hey, I want to do this. This is what I want to do. And he's like, okay, all right, Aaron, this is what we're going to
sure.
do. Okay, sure. Whatever you want to do, make the changes at the line. You know, do your freestyle. But so I think that's the only negative. But I think with this staff and with the youngness of the quarterback, yeah. I think it works great.
Just amazing listening to you talk about the staff, because I think we can look at the staff being pieced together right now. I'm very impressed. Basinonians, I am. I'm very impressed with the guys they've actually got. Now, will they all be able to come together? That's what I want to know right here, because it is blowing my mind. Can you imagine, Max, how brilliant Cliff Kingsbury must be? Or at least how brilliant
coaches.
The Cardinals, at least how much the Cardinals think how brilliant Cliff Kingsbury must be to hire him as their head coach and then staff out this staff around him for him, largely.
Yeah. Do you realize the nightmare if these coaches come in and they go, wait, he's not Boy Wonder? I mean, it's over. They'll all go their own ways in a heartbeat.
Well,
you've got to get this right.
And I think all of the coaches that you've gotten, you look at where they came from, and they all want to make it work. I think that's the biggest thing that you have. And, that's what
Good
I said.
Point.
And I made this point about, I don't care about Cliff Kingsbury per se being the head coach. I care about the staff, because mm-hmm. that's really what's going to make or break you. And when I see this type of staff being assembled, I look at where they came from, what were the circumstances under which they came here, and I think all of these coaches have a prove it mindset.
Mm.
Like, they're eager to prove why they belong in this league and why they do. So almost like a Josh Rosen type of mentality. So I think that's going to work in their favor. And I look at, like, the staff, you know, nothing against the staff from last year, but it seemed.
But against the staff from last year.
Yeah, but I mean, it seemed a little bit staler versus this one, which I feel way more invigorated about, because I think this staff alone wants to be great. They want to be good. And I think Steve Keim kind of got that gut punch last year.
Yeah.
And it woke him up as well, because he's working his tail off to assemble this staff and calling every single type of contact that he had. You know, and I think that's what's really making this work, is when you're actually working the system and not letting the system work you in this process. So that's why it's good. You got to come in the home stretch. You're doing a good job right now. Your on-base percentage is looking good, but we need a homer. Close
well
this game
said.
Out.
You know, well, I didn't travel to L.A. to talk about you, fam. You tripping, yo. I went to be an analyst, in which you acting foolish was the topic I gave my analytical opinion. Get off the gas, yo. You did it to yourself. Max Starks.
Thank you for that.
Has to explain Steelers drama and whether or not A.B. should be a Cardinal. Yes, that happened. And it's next. Did I sound legit right there?
He sold it.
On 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. There are three men in the Octane Community Studio right now, and two of them extremely familiar with the Rooney family. Ron Wolfley's brother played for the Steelers for 11 years. Max Starks, 10.
Yeah, 12 years overall.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
2 years in Minnesota.
Max Starks, Super Bowl winning offensive lineman with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And do you second this?
It all sounds familiar. But one thing I will say is, man, when Art Rooney came out and said that, it's pretty much he's gone, because being around the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, Art Rooney doesn't say too much, but when he says something, he means it.
That is a
provincial
big topic of
family.
Conversation, yeah, in which, if you haven't heard the story, Bruce Arians said some things about Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown did not like it, tweeted out some things. Emmanuel Sanders, who's now a member of the Broncos, if you're a Broncos fan, feel free to correct me. I think he's got a year left on that deal for 2019, and then he's a free agent, was on NFL Network and said that. We'll get into the long story here in a second, but I just want to know from Max, is that something that you go, yeah? Yeah, as soon as Art Rooney speaks, you've got to go a long way before you're staying.
Yeah, the Godfather doesn't speak much. And that is something that's a hallmark of the Rooney family. You think about when Mr. Rooney, and I mean Mr. Dan Rooney, back when he was alive, he didn't say much either. Mm. But when he did, everybody had to listen. Mm. I mean, when the Rooney Rule, named after him, was there, you need to interview minority candidates. Mm-hmm. And then he stuck by his own rule and went out and was like immediately hired Mike Tomlin to prove his point. And look how long Mike Tomlin's been there and how successful he's been. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, when Art comes out and says something, because he's been groomed in that system since his grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, you know, it really resonates. You know, owners, there's owners who speak all the time. There's Jerry Joneses of the world. There's Daniel Snyders. But somebody like the Rooneys, whose football is in their DNA since 1933, you know, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This too shall pass.
Yeah.
And it's a sad situation that it came to that point because, you know, I had a talk on one of the Pittsburgh stations a couple weeks ago. We were hashing this out. And, you know, I said, you know, not knowing all the details, but knowing some of them at the time, I was like, if they don't all come to the table and sit and, you know, have that man-to-man talk and leave your feelings outside the door and just coming in as men to resolve this, then nothing's going to happen. And I think that's what happened. Nothing happened. And now it's like, I got to make a decision. This is the edict. Mm-hmm. This is the final
sure.
decree. And so AB is as much as valuable as he is as a teammate on the field, you know, he's that much of a liability
yeah.
off the field. And I think that has now come to a head.
It's such a shame, too, because I've been told by people that I trust immensely that when he came out, he was a great kid.
I was there.
That's right.
I was there.
He was a great. So
I was there as a six-rounder kid, no facial hair, little short, little fade. And the kid went out, I mean, at training camp. I'll never forget his first training camp. The kid literally, you know, and us as linemen, we take extra
sure.
time on the field.
Sure.
You know, we run our gassers afterwards. We do a little extra set work with resistance bands just to make sure our leg drive is there. And we spend probably about 15, maybe 20 minutes on the field after practice.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, you sign a couple autographs, hit the hot tub, get changed, head to dinner, or you head back to your room and then you head to dinner. And I remember many a times I'm heading back to my room. He's still on the field catching balls from the jugs machine.
Yep. Mm. Yep.
I mean, the kid caught 200 balls a day every day during the football season.
So I want to make this point, Max, because I think it's important right here. Bruce Arians came out, and you heard what Bruce Arians said. Called him a diva
okay? On the Adam yeah. Schefter podcast.
First of
and then
all,
Adam Schefter followed up.
Was that the Antonio that you knew and drafted back in 2011 or whatever year
no.
it was?
He was hardest working, he and Emmanuel Sanders, boy, they went after it because Mike Thomas always telling two dogs, one bone. At that time, we had Mike Wallace, Hines Ward, and we had a pretty good room for one of them to get on the field. And by the end of the season, they were both winning for us to go to the Super Bowl.
So knowing that Antonio Brown was a guy that worked so hard coming out as a kid, he was a kid that was respectful, a kid that all he did was work his butt off. Knowing that and knowing where he is today and hearing Bruce Arians, and correct me if I'm wrong, but B.A. was there, correct?
Yeah.
He was there with you yeah. at that point in time, and I think he was coaching wide receivers. Or was
it
he the offensive coordinator?
He was the OC point? By then.
He was the offensive
he was the
coordinator
OC by then.
That. Okay,
yeah.
That's great. But to hear Bruce Arians say it to me, that was a lifeline to Antonio Brown that was saying, remember who you were. When you came out, remember who you are. Is this really who you're going to be now? That's what B.A. did. He gave him a truth serum when he said that. And that was a lifeline to Antonio Brown. To me, that's how I saw it. And how did Antonio Brown respond to that?
He didn't draft me. He drafted Emmanuel Sanders, same guy who missed rehab to go on networks to talk about me on Situation. He have no clue. Arians now wears Kangoo hats and glasses. But I'm a diva. Done seen it all. Then they say, we friends, stop lying.
Humility's a wonderful master, ladies and gentlemen. How many times have you heard me say this? And the reason why I say it is because it allows you to see what you are and where you need to get better.
With Emmanuel Sanders being called out, I want to play this for you, Max. And as you're listening to this, I want you to listen to Emmanuel Sanders through the filter that you already have, that you know AB and played with him, but also the Larry Fitzgerald filter. Could he rehab the image and be an Arizona Cardinal? This is Sanders on NFL Network.
In my opinion, you know, I've seen several situations where it could have been handled a lot better in terms of why it's happening going on now and the reason why he thinks that he can do that, you know. And so, you know, I remember Mike Tomlin, you know, one of his things was, I'm going to treat everybody the same, but I'm not going to treat everybody the same. Meaning, if you're out here making plays and you're doing this, you're going to have some type of leeway. And so, obviously, he's given Antonio way too much leeway to the point that he thinks that he can leave on a Wednesday and have his agent call on a Sunday and still be on the sideline.
The correct phrase is, I will treat everybody fair, but I will not treat everybody equal. That's Mike Tomlin's phrase. And that's what Mike Tomlin has reinforced within that locker room. And, of course, you know, the biggest thing I always say is monsters are created, not born. And that is where you get into this type of situation. Coach Tomlin's always been an aficionado for the alpha male personality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking at this situation, there's a lot of blame to go around. You know, I said there's plenty of space on the blame sandwich to spread your piece.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is a party sub. You know, it's not just a ham and cheese sandwich. And that's where we're at. I think he was very honest, very frank. You know, because like you said, B.I. already put it out there, two dogs, one bone mentality. I mean, that's he breeded the competition. He wanted to see, you know, the dogs arise in the circumstances, because he knows that pressure bursts pipes or it builds diamonds. Mm-hmm. But the problem is when you put that diamond on a pedestal, you know, as opposed to just putting it on your finger and going about your day.
Mm-hmm.
And
because now it looks like the diamond is busting the pipe.
Yeah, exactly. The diamond's gotten too big that it actually burst the pipe as well. So, you know, it's a tough situation. And looking through the lens of a veteran, well-respected, on his way to the Hall of Fame type of receiver in Larry Fitzgerald and the personality of an Antonio Brown, it doesn't seem, you know, you want him to be humbled, but at the same time, you don't want him to be stifled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it's going to come for AB. You'll never question his work ethic. Even though he acts the way he acts, when he shows up to train, when he shows up to work, he's there to work.
Mm.
And he's going to put it all out there. It doesn't matter. He will burn the candle on both ends, you know, at possible. Apparently, he also knows how to get wax and regrow that candle every season.
You know, I'm running out of time, but I'm going to ask anyway. You know better than anybody. Do you think he should be a Cardinal? Do you think would he screw up Josh Rosen from the standpoint of being a head case, and now you've got a rookie quarterback thing, I got to deal with this guy? Or is it, man, this is a match made in heaven for him to rehab his image?
I think it's a double-edged sword.
Okay.
I think you have to have a Larry Fitzgerald present.
Oh yeah, I agree
in that room. If Larry's not here, then it is a bad fit.
Run.
If Larry is here,
give it a shot.
It won't hurt because he's not going to demand. Well, he's not going to command. I should say he's not going to command that first round pick.
Yeah.
You know, he's second round pick, and possibly if you work some wheeling and dealing, get something else. But he's not going to be that first-round pick. So your first-round pick in negotiation power is protected with the number one overall. I think you would probably have to give up a second-rounder.
Yeah,
and possibly if you get something else in the second round with the trades, you know, lower in the second round. But it's going to take something. And I think if Larry commits, I think it could work.
Keep in mind when I'm saying this, it's easy to say trade him until you see the $21 million cap hit they take if they do.
Yep.
Coming up next from the Auction Community Studios, speaking of that draft, you talked about the number one pick. Let's see if Max Starks agrees with Mel Kiper. Mock number one is here. That's next on 98.7 FM.
Draft?
Yes, okay. On 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.